Today's FAQ is on, I think, national liberation. Here's a couple of introductory thoughts that occurred to me. National liberation, of course, is an easy thing to oppose when it's not your country that's had a history of oppression by another country. For example, when I was a student, I used to have a friend who was a Zionist, and at the same time, I shared a flat with a Palestinian. So it was all I could do to keep the two of them apart. I had to meet them in separate rooms and things like that. Otherwise, they would have just killed each other. As a socialist, how far do you go trying to persuade a Palestinian that capitalism is the real enemy when his experience is that it's Israeli soldiers who are shelling his village? Should we just walk away from debates like that and accept that there's just no point, we're not going to get anywhere? I've also got a friend who's a fervent Catalan independence supporter. It's a bit different there because, of course, the Madrid government isn't sending rockets into Catalonia or building a 9-foot wall around Barcelona. But the Catalans also feel sufficiently hard done by to warrant an independence movement. Now, she calls herself a socialist and an internationalist, and she sees national self-autonomy, or at least self-government, as a kind of stepping stone on the way to international socialism, however she might describe that. We know that the Catalan independence movement is very much about money and economic assets, but for her and a lot of people like her, it's much more about cultural identity. And I think this is something we tend to overlook somewhat in our arguments on this subject, and I'll explain what I mean. We know that socialism will have no nation states, and we also say that it will be culturally diverse, and that cultural diversity is a thing to be cherished and fostered, not erased into a generalised uniformity and a kind of cultural mediocrity, which is exactly what capitalism is doing the world over, as it slowly McDonaldises the whole world. Now, my question is there a way we can show how we appreciate the cultural aspects of so-called national liberation while also divesting of the nationalist elements? So what is it about being French or Korean or Argentinian that would be preserved in socialism? And how could we describe those regional facets if not by calling them French or Korean or Argentinian? That's my question for today.
Shall I kick off? Would that be okay?
Please do.
So I think my kind of approach to these things is I very much play the game of agreeing with people that is they are so incredibly entrenched in their nationalist and patriotic kind of thoughts and feelings, and I tend to agree with them, go along with it for a bit, because I think it can be very helpful to, you know, get them on side by showing you're not their enemy, and that you can understand why they feel the way they do, and sort of trail that along for as long as necessary. And then when you've won them, they realise that you're not an antagonist, that we hit them with a big butt, you know, a butt kind of thing. But have you ever considered, and then sort of gently, catchy monkey, start feeding them, slowly but surely drip feeding them the ideas of socialism until they start to warm? Now, it doesn't always work. I'm not saying it's a magical formula, but I find more often than not when I'm dealing with anyone in any kind of matter, this included, it's quite often easy to start with an agreeable kind of approach and sort of say, well, as I just said, yeah, you're actually right, I think you've got a point, blah, 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 and win them over, and then eventually transfer their thoughts to the wider picture, and quite often that can end up in quite a positive change of mind in the person that you're dealing with. In other words, once you subconsciously plant the idea and get them into your persuasion, that they do tend to mellow and start to realise and appreciate that their original thinking, again, You know, it's not a surefire way of getting a result, but more often than not, their kind of hardwired way of thinking tends to mellow, and they start to see and appreciate the bigger picture.
Well, you'd certainly hope that that was the case, wouldn't you? But I've
Yeah.
noticed it's often a for individuals, it's often a matter of priorities. I mean, my Catalan friend says she's going to concentrate all her efforts into independence as a first step, and then think about socialism later. So we know how much success that's going to have.
It's the expression that you use for hardwired sort of describes it pretty well with so many people. It's the expression might be deep-rooted. From a very early stage, people tend to be programmed into somehow being told they should take pride in the place that they were born, as though that's any of their doing. Never made any sense to me that people say I'm proud of being British or Lancashire or Manchester or something like that. And it's that's in the birth, but nevertheless is there very, very strongly, and it's difficult to deal with. And there's no doubt in my mind, and other people might say differently, but certainly, the way I see it is that the Brexit referendum was largely 100%, but largely won on nationalism, on xenophobia, on the belief that somehow the British are different and superior to other people in other parts of Europe. Difficult to it's incredibly difficult to deal with. Even amongst sort of quite well-informed people who were in many other ways you could agree with on lots of issues. Also, doesn't help a lot of this really. No kind of solution. Very hard to find way of moving these people towards world view rather than a narrow national one.
I mean, what about the fact, and we know it's a fact, that people, because humans are a social species, people have a need to belong. So they need to construct in their heads something that they can belong to. And part of the problem that we've got is that there is no, we're not able to give people an alternative to belong to. I mean, yes, you can belong to the Socialist Party, but that's a very small group, really. By comparison, there is no alternative culture that they can belong to or identify with at the moment. When class consciousness sort of becomes a mass phenomenon, that could very well change. But at the moment, we don't really have that alternative for people, do we?
I think people are so consumed by being, if most like, for example, where I am here in Scotland, the SNP have managed to create this again this attachment, and by being Scottish, there's this kind of commonality, and we'll be better off together as one, separate from England, and and it's a difficult thing to persuade people otherwise because people are generally short-sighted. They want to know what money they're going to have in their pockets and if there's a chance they think they're going to be better off independent within their own or within what they perceive to be their own country, then it's a difficult barrier to break down. I think again trying to remind people that yes, well, they are where they are, they live where they live, they have their ancestral kind of connections. But when all is said and done, we're human beings and we're part of the bigger world. We're you know, it's a worldwide community now. You know, you only really look at the internet and how accessible it is to keep in touch and make contact and communicate with people on the other side of the world. So you know, those kind of landmask, kind of geographical barriers, you know, should you know, it's worth trying to create and plant this picture in people's head that we are, you know, we are one as a race. Now, it's not easy, of course, it's not easy. And sometimes you know, if you're getting nowhere fast, there's no point in going round and round in circles. Sometimes you have to just hold your hands up and agree to disagree. There's no use in flogging a dead horse. But I think, you know, you just got to take that sort of softly approach and eventually get people to understand that they are creatures of a worldwide community rather than just their backdoor kind of community. Whilst that's nonetheless important, they have to be reminded of the bigger picture, and hopefully that would start to work on their thoughts and attitudes.
I'm not sure if I have an incredibly relevant thought, but I do have a maybe about these sort of things. I think sometimes people naturally kind of get locked on to the flag. Whilst I don't know if it would be focusing on tradition rather than anything else. I always used to find it quite talkful, you know, and I always hear it, especially like from the Irish, you know, Irish tradition. I always used to see it, do the sort of thing I do. As my name is Sean Pierce Deegan to begin with, but I actually come from sort of an Irish heritage, I guess, if you even want to call it that. I don't really think about it at all. I was born in England, so therefore, if I have to give myself a nation, I'll call myself English. But maybe it's a way of sort of suggesting that, you know, socialism doesn't take away anyone's identity, and often the kernel of where, you know, our culture comes from is from the home. It's sort of producing, you know, Britain is full of people of different cultures. They've come along, and it's because, you know, big enough groups and families are there in which they can project it. And I guess a socialist society is going to be one society that is going to enable people to express themselves more individually and keep these things, rather than nation states that sort of suggest that actually you should act in accordance with how we decide to do it under a flag. I do feel like I waffled on. That's the end of my point.
Actually, Sean, it was interesting what you were saying, but you were breaking up quite a lot. I'm just going to switch the server region just very quickly, see if that will fix it. So, yeah, if there's anything else you... Right, I've changed that. So if there's anything else you wanted to say, Sean, that's...
Nothing. I think I said anything. I don't know how much was missed. I apologise about that. But I guess to recap, you know, trying to reinstill people that actually I think it's family and traditions that are passed on from generation to generation that are actually a far more core aspect than, you know, putting your flag over a certain area of space and hoping that that's the best way to save it. Because actually, you know, creating your own state sounds very good to sort of strengthen your culture. But obviously, as we know with nation states, if you're sat next to one that's bigger than you, there's a good chance that it's going to be destroyed. And that's something that we'll universally agree isn't going to be something that happens in a socialist state. So it might be the best way to sort of to preserve sort of our culture.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I just to return to a question I asked earlier. I mean, you know, let's think for a moment about some silly examples, you know, like regional examples in this country. So you have, let's say, Eccles cakes and Cornish pasties, and let's supposing that in socialism, you know, people will still enjoy Eccles cakes and Cornish pasties, and of course we can't see any reason why they wouldn't call them Eccles cakes and Cornish pasties. You know, they would be named after the region where they're made, or where they were originally made, and we wouldn't have a problem with that. But what about things like French bread and German bratwurst and, you know, Austrian beer and Russian borscht?
Scotch whiskey.
And Scotch whiskey, exactly. So I think what I'm asking is, we often talk about socialism as if not only all nation states will be abolished, but even the very names of countries. We tend to talk about geographical areas. And I wonder if we're throwing out the baby with the bathwater here. I mean, people in Russia will still call it Russia, and so on and so forth. And there will still be these cultural differences, which, as I suggested before, and I think Sean's also said, would be cherished and, in fact, encouraged in some ways. And so I think what I'm suggesting is that we wouldn't be abolishing the names of countries at all.
Absolutely nothing wrong with countries, and nothing wrong with cultural diversity, nothing wrong with different languages as well. Wouldn't see socialism as a society in which there was a single language. You wouldn't want that. Languages carry cultures, and cultures as such are, they're neutral, as it were. One is no better or than any other. I think somebody who a minute or two ago, was it Paul, talked about the need people have for a sense of belonging. And it's true, people do. There's nothing wrong with that. I think we all have a need for a sense of belonging to some kind of group, if it's only just our family. The trouble is that capitalism frustrates people's sense of belonging. It turns people against one another. It turns groups against one another. And therefore, they seek belonging in some kind of small unit, whether it's a gang or whether it's a particular sort, whether it's a football team, whether it's the country in which they're born. That's what's sort of negative about this the way this sort of sense of belonging expresses itself.
Do you know you've really sort of hit an interesting thought that's just gone through my mind there. Howard was it Howard that was speaking? Yeah, Howard. And that's sometimes, if I'm asked, where am I from? If we're abroad or whatever, then invariably I will answer, from Scotland. But if it's someone sort of, an English friend or cousin or someone, from the UK, British Isles, and they say, where are you from? Now, I've been living down in Ayrshire and Kilmarnock for over 20 years, 25 years or something, or thereabouts. And yet when MD asks me where I'm from, I'll just say, I'm from Glasgow, but I live in Kilmarnock. And it's just because I'm so sort of used to and really quite sort of proud of my roots in Glasgow, because it's such a kind of bad press and publicity over the years. There's some of it reasonably well justified as well. It's a hard city and a rough city, and drunkenness abound and everything. I'm really quite sort of defensive of it in a strange sort of way that I've never really thought of before, and until you sort of made that point, Howard, about a sense of belonging, that although I've lived probably just less than half my, well, good bit less than half my life in Kilmarnock and Ayrshire, and yet I still say I'm from Glasgow, but I live in Kilmarnock. So yeah, there's these things that exist in your own mind that you don't really appreciate sometimes. And if that, you multiply that across everyone else's sort of way of thinking, it's not entirely uncommon at all.
Yeah, when I've talked to some people who have got sort of nationalist tendencies, It isn't always the case that they're assuming that their particular nation is superior to all others. I mean, that's you might find that among the conservatives or the far right, but it certainly isn't always the case, and it's certainly not the case amongst people I've met. What they're concerned about is that their particular country has a certain its own unique and special cultural identity. It's not better than others, it's not worse than others, but it is theirs and it belongs to them, and it's special to them. And this is what they don't want to lose. And they're quite right to fear losing it, because, as I said before, globalization is actually trying to erase these identities. It's trying to make everything standardize everything and make everything uniform. And you know, this is what they're afraid of. They're afraid of losing their special cultural identity. And I wonder if it's a way in for us into this debate to say that, look, we respect these cultural differences. We respect the fact that you've got a cultural heritage and a history that's different from your regional neighbours. And socialism wouldn't attack those cultural differences. Well, it depends what they are, of course. I mean, some cultural customs are very anti-worker, anti-human. But in the main, this is something that we could perhaps emphasise in our arguments. So that at the moment, we don't tend to do. There are these cultural identities, and it doesn't have to be to do with nationalism. It's allied with nationalism, but it doesn't have to be. If we can decouple the two, we can show people how you can have a working class solidarity, global solidarity, as well as separate and independent cultural identities.
Well, I think you said it sort of there, Paddy, sort of fairly clearly, actually, that, you know, maybe that's a strong point, sort of capitalism, and maybe even more specifically that, you know, mass production, where especially outside of where it's sort of useful and necessary, is going to be sort of the biggest sort of corrosive element on an individual's culture. And whilst global matters will have to be sort of seen from the global population, you know, someone living here is going to have sort of, you know, in this area of the world in England, is going to have no interest surely about, you know, how the Catalans sort of decide to live their life in that area, as long as no one's being oppressed by it.
Yeah, I think it's certainly it's a good play to have when you are coming together in a mixed group. I think, as I've said or described a few times before, or at least once or twice before, and I've been on here about how I was an advocate for and on behalf of the Glasgow-based Poverty Alliance, who's themselves a part of the bigger umbrella organisation known as the European Anti-Poverty Network, EPAN. And we used to come together once a year, all funded by the Brussels-based European Parliament. It was a three-day event, and it was obviously all designed, politicians, European members of parliament, to come together and try and work through ways of trying to bring about a decent standard of living to people of all the individual countries. Now, on a night, it obviously led to some good discussions, and we had this a social event comprised of couple of people from each of the representative countries, of which there were many, and then there was, so it was all sort of laid out in this giant room, you know, lots of tables, everyone would bring items, you know, sort of obviously as a couple of us from Glasgow would bring the usual sort of tartan stuff, packets of shortbread, bottles of whiskey. The Germans would bring, you mentioned earlier on, Paddy, the bratwurst, snacks and schnapps. And so on and so forth. Iceland would bring their representative alcoholic drink. And very often we reach this common consensus that although we all obviously have our own kind of individual identities, we still had this common bond that we were all basically fundamentally poor, and we had more in common. So whilst we celebrated our diversity and our own kind of national pride, if you like, in the sense of, you know, those things that could be linked and associated to, you know, people, you know, obviously with the old bloody kilt and stuff on, the big Iceland boys, with this guy must have been about fucking 7 foot tall and about 25 stones, an absolute bear, and he had the whole kind of Nordic kind of looking, you know, he came dressed like the, you know, that kind of historical sort of invaders looking type of look about them, you know, and they really looked the part. And so we all sort of dressed to suit, dressed to impress, and brought our own sort of goodies with us. But it was all very jovial, it was all very friendly, because it was all done on the back of the fact that we were working class people who shared the same problems throughout that area known as Europe. And therein lied the bigger problem, the economic argument, which left us all pretty downtrodden. But we could still, you know, share some respectful kind of thoughts into our history and our qualities and all the rest that went with it. So that was a really good experience, and that pretty much backs up a lot of what Barry's just described too, and that experience that I had for about half a dozen times. I've done that over the last 7 or 8 years, and very pleasant and enjoyable it was too.
Yeah, it occurs to me that we could probably sum this up in quite a simple formula, which would be cultural diversity within class solidarity.
Yeah, that's a good one-liner. I like that. That's good.
It's a one-liner. It's people need to understand what class solidarity means. Just before you said that, I was sort of turning. Well, the same kind of thing in my mind. What would be a sort of, what slogans could we use? Or Steve were here, what he calls memes, slogan we use. Well, something perhaps like global identity, global organization, local identity. Maybe global's not a very good word to use because of associations of globalization. But anyway. Something like that, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's quite that's an interesting development. Really, we haven't, and I do think this is something we haven't really thought about in the way that we project our ideas. We unconsciously present this image of the, you know, the working class of the world being this sort of great sort of homogeneous uniform collective, which of course it isn't, and that isn't how people. Workers themselves perceive it, and if we sort of make more positive efforts to celebrate what Howard calls local identity or diversity, we could actually, you know, potentially make inroads into, as I said, sort of decoupling the idea of cultural identity from the idea of national identity. If we could drive a wedge between those two things by celebrating one and separating it from the others, maybe we could make some progress on the sort of nationalism debate.
I can't remember who the chap was, but there was a conversation the Socialist Party had with this one particular chap, and he was very strong on the fact that, you know, not offering identity to anything. Which was a really interesting point of view, extreme that was necessary. But I think what was interesting, a point that he brought out, is that despite the fact, even with our economics, and even though we are right, a large problem nowadays is that people just generally don't consider themselves working class, whether they sort of believe they're part of the mythical middle class or whatever, they don't identify. So this could be really beneficial. Again, another way of, you know, almost positioning the party as more of a, you know, we're not just here strictly for the class war, though specifically that's ultimately what things come down to. But we, you know, we identify other people's struggles, maybe.
Yeah, we're having a bit of a struggle with your connection there as well, Sean, unfortunately. But I think we got most of what you were saying. People don't identify as workers. That's absolutely right. I think people identify in a number of different ways. I think also people have multiple identities. I mean, if you're at work, you identify as a worker with other workers. If you're at home or in, you know, you go to your local hobby clubs or something, you have different identities there. And possibly different sense of status within different these different environments. So I think people have look at themselves as, well, as what they are, as complex individuals with a number of different pegs to hang their identity on. They're not just one thing, and you know, we shouldn't. And I think sometimes we when we talk about workers, it almost becomes a kind of reductionist argument. We're trying to sell an image to workers that they are just one thing, but of course we know that's not true at all. But we don't often take the trouble to say that.
The trouble with class solidarity, which was part of the slogan you suggested, Paddy, that I've always found this a problem, to be honest. The party is absolutely committed to using the term working class, which is what it means, obviously. But forever it's imprinted in people's minds that those who earn their living, their hands, as it were, and therefore there are other classes as well of people who earn their living in different ways. And as a slogan, it's sort of it somehow marks us out as old-fashioned in a way that we definitely don't want to present ourselves as. So if I'm writing about or speaking for the party, I would always tend to use, if I'm to use the word class, I'd always say that I wouldn't use it, I'd say wage and salary earners, or worse, wage and salary earning class. And you know, we talked one of these discussions some time ago about how one small group of party members many years ago decided, wrongly I think, that the main thing wrong with the party was its terminology. Proceeded to break away and set up their own small group, which abolished a lot of the terminology, brought in terminology that they thought would be more effective. In the event, it didn't work, but nevertheless, I think we handicap ourselves by a sort of insisting on the fact that there's a class struggle, but by the way we present it and the terminology with which we present
it. I find sometimes they use that term wealth creators being associated to the owning and the capitalist class, and the people that sort of put their hands in their pockets, pay the wages, that they are the entrepreneurs or the wealth creators. I like to remind people that the real wealth creators are the people who go out there and produce the goods, and that's usually quite a good way, I've found anyway, of avoiding terms like capitalism, socialism, working class, to sort of build on the term wealth creators, and break it down to the fact that the real wealth creators are, without wishing to get too scientific or too technical about it, but are the people who produce the surplus value, Once you start going down to that road, depending who you're talking with, you can start to create a bit of confusion. But certainly just letting people know that it is themselves who are the wealth creators, the real wealth creators, the people whose physical and mental attributes are the ones that are producing the goods that create the wealth, not the people that handle the little bits of paper and money that have to be incidental to the end result.
I think the problem with that, Paul, is that there are an awful lot of jobs that don't create wealth. If you're a hairdresser, where's the wealth you're creating there? If you're a ticket collector, where's the wealth you're creating? I've had lots of jobs where I was just pushing paper around an office. I didn't feel like I was creating any wealth whatsoever. It's quite a small minority of workers are actively involved in producing wealth in that sense. So I quite like Howard's formulation, wage and salary earners, because that kind of covers all bases, doesn't it? And it also doesn't create this antipathy that the word working class, the phrase working class, does with people.
Oh yeah, totally. Howard's, that's a good sort of one thing covers all aspects. I've been more involved in an industry. So obviously, you know, the arguments that I've been involved in tend to be arguments of industrial production. I've always been a industrial worker, not massive, just, I was, you know, a printer, basically, a screen printer, and producing, of all things, advertising products of one sort or another, large format banners, posters, big ads, and such like. So working alongside people who do get their hands dirty, and such like, builders, printers, all that kind of thing, that tends to be only where my argument would apply accurately. So yeah, certainly what Howard says certainly cuts across all those kind of differentials, and a good argument it is too.
As we've been talking, I've note on my email account, a message has come, and it's from an organization called Swansea Bay Refugee Matters. I get emails from the local asylum support group, which of the events taking place, and I'm invited to a sing-along this evening on Zoom at 6 o'clock, and it's a sing-along to the song Imagine. Not bad, actually. I know some people in the party don't like the song, but it comes closer to any other song I can imagine, which states it's our case. You know, whatever John Lennon sort of, whatever his position was politically, pretty good, and pretty positive that people are to go along and sing this song together.
Can I just say something? I think nationalism, I've talked to friends and stuff, good close friends of mine, about socialism, and what they tend to argue is they care for their friends and they care for their family and things, but they, you know, they can't care for everybody. That's how they argue, right? You know, and I think nationalism's a bit like that. You know, you care for the people you live close by to, but you don't think you can do it on a world scale or whatever. So it's making that leap, right? You know, that seeing everybody as a potential friend or potential family, and seeing, you know, socialism as a possibility. But I've heard people say they don't care what happens in Africa because they only care about their friends and family, really, you know. So I think it's short-sightedness by people that, you know, that have this nationalistic view or whatever. And it comes from just accident of birth and where you were born, really. So it's just a bit strange, right? But it seems to be put into people from birth or whatever, you know.
The old "I'm all right, Jack" attitude.
I'm interested to know a little bit about Howard, what you said there, and that actually sounds like a pretty enjoyable thing you're taking part in tonight, if you presume you are taking part in it. But you said that some party members don't like the song Imagine. I mean, for me, it's second to none. What I'm interested to know, what is it about it that some members might not like? Did anyone know? Obviously, addressing it to you, Helen, but even if anyone else knows, what is it that some members are not keen on?
Won't be taking part in it, Paul, actually, but you ask a good question, and I've heard sort of adverse comments about the song amongst party members. Not sure why, because I don't think there's anything in it that we wouldn't agree with, and I think it sort of encapsulates me effectively we stand for.
It's almost always remember Steve Coleman once describing it as the SPGB anthem, you know, and I can definitely resonate with that. It's just an absolutely fantastic song. It just about describes what we stand for perfectly. Now, that's not to say we all have to be huge fans of John Lennon and what he thought, good or bad, but certainly the lyrics to that song is
Perfect.
What about you, Paddy? You're usually quite good at understanding these things. What's your sort of feelings on this song of mine?
I wasn't massively keen just because I thought the tune was a bit boring. Sorry. I thought the lyric was good. It sums up our case. I know at least one party member who basically can't stand John Lennon because she thinks he was a wife beater, which somewhat detracts, if true, from the sentiment of the song. It's a shame there aren't more songs like this, really. I know Darren O'Neill is a bit of an expert in songs that express a socialist viewpoint, but there's not very many of them, is there?
What's the evidence for John Lennon being a wife beater, by the way?
I've no idea. I think his first wife, I don't know. Let's not indulge in gossip, but so I'm told. It's very difficult to write a song that doesn't sound preachy, which is, I think that's the greatest success of the song, that it manages to not do that.
I think it's come out as one of the, probably the number one most popular song of all time. In one of these kind of international polls that are taking place, people have voted for their favourite song of all time, and it's consistently ended up as number one. So that, I suppose, speaks for itself. You know, there's obviously something in there that people can relate to, which is probably quite a good sign.
Yeah, the thing is, I once had to. That's part of the problem in a way, is that I've heard so many artists doing it that it's almost become meaningless. I once had to work the bar at a Tory party like Rotary Club meeting, and they all sang it at the end. And I thought, you Tories, what the hell are you doing singing this song? But they didn't care. It was just something. It just sounded nice, and they were quite happy to sing something that sounded nice without really considering what any of it meant.
Yeah, I mean, they play it in churches as well. It's very popular for funerals as well, you know, though they've had a religious ceremony and then they have "No Above His Only Sky" sung along. It seems a bit bizarre, right?
isn't one line in "Imagine No Religion"?
Well, that's just what I mean about people taking no notice of the words. or it would be tragic if all these people having their funerals playing Imagine because really they were socialists all their life, but they never got in touch with the Socialist Party. That would be a real shame.
Oh, God. Paddy, I wanted to go back to wealth creation. I think it's important that, for the party's case that we have a generous idea of who the wealth creators are. If we're thinking of a whole system of wealth creation and it's an appropriation by a ruling class, we're thinking about something very, very complex. And for it to be possible for people to be able to create wealth, you're going to need a whole lot of stuff. You're going to need people who get educated, who get attended to when they get sick, and a lot of other things besides that. Now, I think it's important for the party's position that we recognise that the people who are the wealth creators are the people who contribute to that whole system. And that's why it would include doctors, teachers, shop assistants, floor cleaners, and so on. And the reason I think it's important is that we need to emphasise that all of these people in their different positions, some luckier than others in the lives that they live, have an interest in common. And I think if we don't stick to that very wide conception of who the wealth creators are, we lose that point, and I think it's an important one.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I think the point I was making is that a lot of workers don't see themselves as wealth creators, in the same way that lots of stupid jobs I've done didn't feel like they were creating anything. Just doing paperwork. So I was really talking about how people see themselves. But I don't disagree with your larger point. And in fact, there's an important there's another really important thing in there, which is that you know, going back to this, the way we use this word worker, we kind of use it as if it defines us as people, and of course that's not what we mean. We don't want to use the word worker to define us as people, but it is the thing that we've got in common, economically speaking. It's the motivation behind the class struggle. It's the reason why we need solidarity, but it isn't something that defines us as people. And I suppose, again, you know, I think we don't tend to, we use the word worker as a kind of shorthand, but people coming across the party case for the first time don't realize that we're using a shorthand. They don't know what exactly they don't see the subtlety behind the word. And they just see them. They just see us as bracketing them as us all the same. That's my point.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that, and that's why I think it's important that we have to spell it out. I mean, to talk about the working class is just hopeless. It just creates so many misconceptions.
It's so difficult, isn't it, though, when you're producing a magazine every month, that you just can't keep on redefining the same terms every time you use them. It's just frustrating, but that's just the reality.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think the Standard does very well in spelling things out in a way which is not misleading and doesn't give people the wrong impression from the outset. Take a bow.
Another John Lennon song springs to mind there. A working class hero is something to be. And, you know, maybe, you know, reflecting on songs and something Darren was talking about the other night. You know, it's trying to build up that kind of familiarity and that bond. And I suppose when you're dealing with someone who really doesn't have anyone out with, maybe socialists, trade union members, you know, when you're dealing with someone who is maybe, well, I'd be inclined to think of it as having delusions of grandeur, you know, but that's only because I'm so switched on to socialism and the whole class struggle and the class war and the class consciousness that sometimes troubles me when I come across a worker and I really have to sort of restrain myself verbally sometimes when you people describe themselves somehow middle class or something other than, you know, working class, when it's clear it's what they are. You know, they've got a mortgage, they've got a rent to pay, you know, they get their holiday once a year on the credit card, and yet somehow or other they think they're something other than what they are in reality. Sometimes you don't want to burst people's bubbles, but sometimes you have to hit them hard where the truth hurts, you know, to really try and remind them of their absolute background. And that's just my kind of thoughts on the matter too. But try and build a positive picture for them too, you know, how they can try and work towards a better future for all. And you know, you don't want to leave anyone feeling totally demoralised and depressed if you can possibly help it. But for these people that sort of dig their heels in and think that there's something other than working class, sometimes they need a wee gentle reminder that of the reality of the world that they're living in, whether they like it or not. Certainly don't want to turn them off from the party, but every now and again you need to give people a few home truths. Especially if you think they're getting better of you in a fucking argument.
Yeah, I remember one time in the late 80s, back in the days when we used to have conference socials, and there was a bunch of members. We were all in the London Underground on our way to head office, I think. I had a guitar, so I just decided to start singing Working Class Hero very loudly on the Underground platform. I'm not sure what the other commuters made of it, but it was a proper bonding moment for us members, and I felt like a proper revolutionary. It was great.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so sometimes, you know, there's no harm in building your own ego as well if, you know, there's good justification in it. You know, we all need a boost to our morale, whatever it takes sometimes. It'd be pretty demoralising otherwise.
How about a party choir?
Oh, very good. Now that would be good. Get yourselves onto the X Factor. Yeah, but can you imagine that? Good. That would be a riot.